Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
Flight guidance.
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this soundtrack.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance.
Okay,
we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot delta H. Your go-no goes based on the data you had for an LOS. I see we got it back. Give you another few seconds.
We're yelling fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Vital.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Econ.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue. PDI.
Coming to you live from the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country in Shingle Springs, California, this is your host, John Almada.
Did a little bit of that last night. This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio, and my name is John Almada, and I'm that guy who thought the whole thing up, decided to think up a paranormal team of my own and get out there and actually do it and make all the mistakes and get a few things right on occasion. And yesterday we did that. We went out to Stockton to an as-yet-to-be-determined place. I'm not quite at liberty to talk about exactly where we were, except to say that it was five stories tall, community-type building, and absolutely huge. And we were there basically working out how we were going to do our investigation at the end of this month, and we're going to have about six or seven people on site and actually do some television filming. We're going to actually be doing work for our video, our very first video effort for this year that's on that particular case. So we're going to have a cameraman following us around while we hunt. It's a new twist on our hunting. And we already had some interesting phenomena, including one of the people that was there with us showing us around was grabbed and thrown bodily in the attic of this particular building. And I actually came down with a horrible headache in the same exact spot just prior to that. About 5 seconds before this person was literally pushed, extremely hard, I heard to my left a man's voice yelling, and there was only four of us in the room in the attic at that time. Luckily, I have a recorder. I had a recorder running, so we're going to be analyzing that evidence and see where things go. But a little bit tired. We got home about 2 a.m. Just got a little bit of sleep, but it was a very, very interesting case, and we had a lot of other things, a lot of K2 activity. Going to be a case for the books on this one, especially with the amount of activity from floor to floor. Floors 2, 3, and 4 were just chock full of stuff. We had the pushing incident on the attic. Basement was pretty spooky. There was a huge basement area. And I actually got the scare of my life. I went into one room, and it turned out they had a bunch of Halloween decorations and life-size figures of, howling demons, hags, things like that. And I turned the corner and just about lost it. I ran face-to-face with this screaming hag thing that was, eye-to-eye with me when I turned the light on it. So that was not good. We had a bit of an emotional moment there. I jumped back. I did not scream. I was proud of myself, but I did pretty good. And Karen's in. I'll say hi to everybody. We got Kathy, my dear Kathy, from back east. We got Jake with a an exclamation. Jake with an exclamation. We got Karen, GRI Phoenix. She's here. And we got I got to call her about the case, getting her up here. And then Luna Woman, she's up here in Cameron Park, and she actually went out hunting on her own a little bit today. She's turning into quite the paranormal investigator. So we've got all that, those folks out there, glad to have them here. We are going to be having Linda Hilburn, who is a licensed psychotherapist, a certified clinical hypnotherapist, professional intuitive, a workshop presenter, instructor, group facilitator, singer, and writer, and she works with clients individually and in groups. She founded and directed a state-approved and regulated hypnotherapy training school, and she teaches classes in all areas of her expertise and interest, and has spent more than 30 years exploring the intuitive and metaphysical arts. And during the last 3 years, she switched from writing nonfiction to fiction. And her first full-length novel is The Vampire Shrink, about a psychologist who gets caught up in the supernatural underworld, and that was released in October 2007 as a trade paperback. So we're going to be having her on at right about 8:30, and I'm going to be sitting here flying the show until then. We got Oim Gi. Oim Gi. And we probably, is that Patrick is the name? Oim Gi. And Matrix Radio is on. Good to see Matrix Radio. Good to have you there, my friend. Took your advice, too, and as a matter of fact, just want to let you know, I did email the folks over at Coast to Coast AM about some of our EVPs that we've picked up. So hopefully, maybe they'll get back to us. Did that about 4 or 5 days ago. I sent that letter out. So we'll see what they say. If they takes them a while to get back, who knows? Maybe they never will. But I'm still going to be doing EVPs. Anyway, we are well on our way here. Let's go ahead and get the show moving, and I'm just trying to find the right browser window on this laptop. If you do want to go check out Linda's website, it's www.lindahilburn, and it's Linda with a Y, LYNDAHILBURN, and .com. So give that a check. She's got quite a few websites. This woman is busy, so we're going to be getting her on here. Some paranormal stuff in the news, as we always do. There is actually a trend in the cruise business that there's themed cruises these days. And the reason that I found this, it was I just searched on paranormal for the standard news items. And this, they were talking about Elvis cruises and cougar cruises. But something new has come along, the cougar cruises. That could be, well, interesting. But evidently, television personality David Wells is leading a paranormally themed cruise. So I don't know if you take a haunted ship out or you're doing bringing people who know how to do readings and that kind of thing aboard. I tend to think that's probably more what it's like. But David Wells is announced this week he'll be hosting a voyage focused on the topic for the first time in June on Royal Caribbean's Liberty of the Seas. And the seven-night group sailing is organized by a branch of travel agency Cruise Planners. It is on for June 13th through the 20th with a departure out of Miami. It's an Eastern Caribbean trip with stops at Phillipsburg, St. Martin, which I've been to, San Juan, Puerto Rico, and Labadee. I've never heard of that place. That's must have just popped up in a volcanic eruption. Labadee. Okay. Royal Caribbean's private... Oh, that's it. Royal Caribbean's private beach destination in Haiti. I don't think that's going to be a great place to go with the earthquake. Oh, my goodness. And for everybody, too, on that earthquake, if you can... Oh, I see. Matrix is Patrick. I got a special note from a friend. Okay. All right. Anyway, with regard to the earthquake, I would recommend to everybody, if you even have $5, send it to the Red Cross to help with this. This thing is an absolutely huge disaster. And when you see the scale of the disaster through some of the satellite photos I've seen, It's just unbelievable. And there are literally people right now who are still buried alive in some of those buildings. And, you know, everybody's trying to do the best they can. So do what you can. Do, you know, give a little bit out of your pocket to help these folks. And I think that's going to be something that everybody's going to feel better about. So, you know, let's all say a prayer for Haiti. Anyway, moving on to there, let's look at TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. It sounds so interesting, the voice of Tucson. And they have a little section called Paranormal Old Pueblo, all things weird for Tucson paranormal lovers. And they're talking about the paranormal past and present of Fort Lowell. And so this is one of our special interest things. We talk about different haunted places. And Fort Lowell here, during my two-year stint as a resident of the old Fort Lowell Historic District in Tucson's northeastern side, this is Cheryl Strong, is the author of this, my paranormal curiosity was continually fed by intriguing tales of ghosts and hauntings. These accounts of hauntings aren't limited to the Fort Lowell Park, where remnants of the United States military camp are preserved. Reported paranormal activity circulates well outside of the boundaries of the park and even into some of the old homes in the general vicinity. The accounts of ghosts and hauntings are known to have long been circulating since the year 1900, 9 years after the last living soldiers left Fort Lowell. According to many accounts, the spirits of soldiers who died at Fort Lowell have never left. It was first reported around 1900 that the ghost of a soldier haunted the ruins of the old Fort Lowell. Residents of the area allegedly spent much time participating in a crude early form of ghost hunting. The residents were said to have spent countless hours, along with countless rounds of ammunition, firing at the ghostly soldier. The soldier would simply disappear upon attack. Now, that's a pretty, you know, I don't know. Shooting at ghosts? That's a new one. I kind of like it, though. Let's just go shoot up, you know, every haunted site we are at. I'm sure that's, actually, come to think of it, it's funny, because I was just at a haunted place with, just coming back when I was traveling with Spencer Hughes. We stopped at a Mare Island, which is it's an old naval base that's shut down, and it's falling apart. And we went into some of the buildings, and I actually took Spencer's portable Webby, Sony Webby video camera, and took it up, and I actually walked up into the second level, braved some of the stairs that did look like they were going to fall apart, but I did get up there and took some video. But we found evidence of ammunition everywhere. Some people had gone in there and just shot the hell out of that place, but you know, we felt that there was a good chance of getting EVPs in there. So hopefully whatever they're shooting at in there is not alive and is probably laughing at them. But anyway, going on with this, it's said that the soldier, after being shot at here in Fort Lowell, turned the tables on one attacker and fired back in defense with a blast of rocks. The newspapers of the time started covering the story, and on December 14th, 1900, the Arizona Daily Citizen, the predecessor of the Tucson Citizen newspaper, reported that reputable citizens continued to see the ghost. The story stated that these reputable citizens were preparing for a gun battle with the Spectre soldier, scheduled to take place that very evening. So they were actually scheduling battles with ghosts. That I would have loved to have been there. The ghost, in this case, emerged victorious, which I would tend to think would be the case, as the paper reported on December 28th that the ghost had returned to steal a resident's turkey on Christmas Eve. The Republic in Phoenix also ran the stories, as interest in all things paranormal grew at the time. And I just wonder what he did with the turkey. Anyway, so that said, I'm going to actually, while I'm doing this, I'm going to jump over and grab a URL to post for everybody, because I did read that Linda's site off here, and just post this here in the chat room. So we got everybody there, and looking at the chat room, we don't have anybody in yet. Let's see, we're at 8:14 past the hour. I'm going to go ahead and go with our brief 20-second station identification, and then we'll be right back.
This is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio coming to you live on blogtalkradio.com.
Troops is filmed on location with the men of the Imperial Forces. All suspects are guilty, period. Otherwise, they wouldn't be suspect, would they?
That is actually one of the best darn spoofs that ever was done. It's an old classic of Star Wars. Troops is filmed on location. Anyway, Kathy, oh, Jake is sitting here saying, oh, wow, I remember you, to Kathy. I guess there's a big hug fest going on here in the chat room. This is good. So we've got guest 4015, Jake, Karen's Dream, Luna Woman, and Kathy, of course, of Kathy's Distant Echoes. And now we have guest 4015. I wonder how they'd come up with these names. They should just like have a random pick from the dictionary rather than these numbers. Guest Turkey Breath, guest Porpoise, guest Ghost Rider. Oh, that's us. So hopefully it'll maybe take. I think I'll talk to them about taking my advice and take it from there. But anyway, we also, let's just talk a little bit about, we got 10 minutes before our guest shows. I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the other cases going on. We did, I mentioned early on, we did post some of our evidence on the Ghost Rider Paranormal site from our two investigations of the Truckee Hotel. And we are going to be going back to that particular establishment probably around March. And we may even open up to have an extra investigator or so come out with us as a guest. Just if they want to attend and book a room on their own and join us. So we're looking at opening that up. We'll get the plans firmed up a little more, but we've been invited back. The evidence we got was just outstanding, especially on the fourth floor of the Truckee. And we did have photos that Spencer did really great with some of his work, and he managed to capture an amazing shot. If you go out on the GRI website, you'll see that the site of the hotel of this, what appears to be an entity that was just floating around and leaving this distinct trail highlighted against the backside of the building where we were standing. And we got an amazing number of EVPs and a lot of what appeared to be residual things relating to a murder in the second floor near room 215, and not far from where one of my own relatives was actually shot herself in the, I believe it was the early 70s. So, yes, and I found that out after we'd scheduled the hunt. I had not realized that was the very hotel. So a lot of strange things went on there, but we have all our case evidence has been uploaded, and we've been really diligent about getting our stuff out there and reports going. So we will be posting probably one additional video. I've been after Spence to get the video of some confirmatory evidence we got in room 401 where the K2 meter was lighting up on command. So that was just an amazing case. So definitely go check that out. Download some of those EVPs. If you want to critique them, great. We love to hear if people think maybe what we caught was not evidence, because we're fair about that. We are scientific, and we do take criticism well. So go ahead and get out there and take a listen. Let's see. It's hard to figure out everybody's real name here. Well, these people are all named that. There's Jake. You know, he's got Jake with an exclamation, guest 4015. Kathy signs her name Distant Echoes. It's true. She does. She signs all her checks that way. Tracy in California, that way it'll all just go to the entire city. All your bills will go there. That works. Anyway, let's see. Let's take a look around one more area here. I'm going to check a little bit of that Paranormal Cops show is also going to make a little bit of there's some news on that. I'm going to go ahead and pop that open. I just happen to have. It's going to be on A&E, And they are, there's basically a thing with, I think like alarm companies, people who do any kind of night security work, and of course police officers are probably going to be the people who have the most run-ins with the paranormal just by the nature of their job. So I think it's it was really an excellent idea for A&E to do this and to go with having these guys out there, you know, doing a show about this. And I think we're going to see more of this kind of thing. This is based out of Chicago, and I feel sorry for those guys right now because Chicago is absolutely frozen solid. But these guys are actually going in and applying real police skills to their cases. And so I don't know. I think this is going to be a debuting later in the year. So they are taking, you know, basically taking some of these things. It's called, off-screen, they're known as the Chicago Paranormal Detectives, CPD. And all of them say they've had paranormal or at least abnormal encounters with deceased relatives, a shadowy ballerina, a full-bodied apparition. And these guys are realists and skeptics nonetheless, and they work strictly by the book. And, man, I'd love to get these guys on the show. So I'm going to definitely give that a try and see if we can get them out. And they seek out places where people are desperate, where you can't work in your business anymore, you can't live in your house because of all the activities. So, one of the best parts I like here, unlike, actually just like so many, really reputable paranormal teams, they are free of charge and basically self-funded. So these guys are the real deal, and I'm just looking forward to seeing what their particular show is all about. Let's see what's going on in the chat room. Make sure everybody's good. She's amazing. Well, Kathy is amazing. I talk with her, you know, every few nights, and she makes me laugh. She's a funny woman. You are funny, Kathy. You make me laugh. Let's see. Tiger Woods on Paranormal. Oh, no, I'm not going to play that story. Tiger Woods on Paranormal State. I don't think so. I checked that article out, and it was not what you would think it would be. Poor Tiger, you know, he really messed up. He needs to just come out and just be honest with everybody and then shape up his act. And paranormal activity, how many of you guys in the chat room have seen paranormal activity? I'm a hoot, too. I'm a hoot three and four. That's the hoot one was just a real, you know, pain. But anyway, paranormal activity. I saw that on DVD here over the New Year's Eve, and it was really interesting. I thought probably the strangest thing was the whole thing with them putting the footprints where they had the footprints, and it was a three-toed footprint. Oh, you love that movie, Jake. Okay. Hi, Sherry. Good to see you. Sherry from Canada? Yeah. Sherry.ca. Or Ka. Sherry Ka? All right. But anyway, yeah, paranormal activity. It seems like there's going to be a whole spate of these type movies now. They're the micro-budget movies, and it didn't cost them very much to actually produce it. But it was a pretty... I thought it was pretty well done and fairly realistic, except for the part where, you know, at the very end, it was just a sudden end, and I guess they had to pick a point at which to stop it. And Karen says she's not thrilled with it. I was sort of at the end. I wish there had been, like, a happier ending. It just, and then you wonder ended up going after she killed her boyfriend. I think, really, the whole reason she killed him was because he just kept poking that camera in her face, and anybody would become possessed after that, so... You cannot be living your life as a paranormal investigation. I can only take it so long, too, you know. So, anyway, we're going to go check here. We're going to check the call-in board. Nobody in. If anybody does want to call in, by the way, and talk about anything going on with their stuff, feel free to give me a yell here at 646-478-0377. And we'll talk about whatever things you got going on. Got to talk to Karen, by the way. Karen, I was just looking on the show page and for our upcoming guests, And I told you I was going to get you in, and so I'll send you, or actually I'll call you about getting a show date, and we can play some of your evidence from some of your amazing cases you've been on, and we'll do a show all about you. So you got tired of all of them. You got tired of them eating and brushing their teeth. Oh, jeez. Yeah, and it was just sort of, I don't know. It was well done. It was a neat story, but I just don't think that you could take that camera being there all the time like that, and in your face, on something like that. So I don't know. And then the way they handled the paranormal investigators, that guy coming in, and then he was a psychic, and he said, "Oh no, I can't be here. I got to leave." And he left them hanging, and the other guy was out of the country. Well, why didn't they go out on the web and pull somebody else in? My God. Ding dong, Jim. John got it right. Ha ha ha. Okay. You guys are cracking me up. All right, we got a caller on air here, area code 303. So we're going to go ahead and bring them on, see who we have here. Caller, you're on the air.
Is that me?
That's you.
Well, hey there. This is Linda.
Oh, hi, Linda.
Hi there. I'm calling in. Said to call in at 8:30.
Yeah, actually it was 8:26. You know what? I didn't even realize the time. I'll go ahead and do the intro for you since
Alrighty.
You're here. Brief bio here. Linda makes her living as a licensed psychotherapist, certified clinical hypnotherapist, professional intuitive, workshop presenter, instructor, group facilitator, and writer. And I said that all in one breath.
How about that?
You're a busy woman.
I guess so.
Yeah. And you started
this. I just have a short attention span.
You have a short attention span? Oh,
yeah.
No, not
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
You got a lot of websites, too. I was really tripping through your websites. When
oh, you
at
were?
Everything. Oh, yeah. You got a lot. You got a lot of stuff.
I do. I've been around a while. Yeah.
Oh, kind of like me. I'm 50 years old, and I saw the 30 years, and I went, oh, yeah. I probably ran into you at a time or two.
Yeah.
Drove by you a few times.
Yeah.
It says here you teach classes in all area of your expertise and interest and have 30 years exploring the intuitive metaphysical arts. And you've gone into writing from nonfiction to fiction and written the Vampire Shrink, which I think is brilliant. And I play Vampire Wars on Facebook, so I love everything vampire. And it's been released as a trade paperback.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. Let's just take it from there. How did you, let's just start at the beginning.
Okay.
When did you know you had all these abilities and gifts and when did you know your life was going to follow this path?
I don't know if I ever really knew that. When I was little, I just was told I was weird and possessed by Satan and all the other things that you hear when you're a strange child. So I just thought that there was something wrong with me. I didn't think it was a good thing. It was all the way until I was a teenager, until I figured out it was a good thing. Prior to that, it was a problem.
Was it like
it was an
a family
embarrassment
thing?
To my family.
Oh, did you have fun, like fundy family, or it was sort of they just wanted to fit into the community, or
no, not at all. I think it came from sort of a religious set of biases where if you weren't following the party line, then of course you were possessed and were evil and bad things had you. So it was very black and white.
Well, and so the revelation for you to discover in your teenage years, something happened to change all that.
Well, actually, I discovered that being able to be pretty intuitive was a way to get a lot of attention. And so it wasn't even any kind of wisdom on my part. It was like figuring out that the things that I could do, people seemed to like that, and they liked to hang out with me because of what I could do. And so I got a lot of attention, so I just went for it. It was much later. It was like 10 more years past that when I actually began to fully grasp the level of the responsibility then that I had if I was going to muck about in people's lives.
So you started doing basically reading people and actually seeing futures, things like that for them.
But I, once again, had no wisdom about it for a long time. Just thought it was really kind of a neat thing, and really didn't occur to me that everybody couldn't do it, but it seemed to be getting me the attention I desired, you know, a needy teenager kind of thing. So I just, it was much later, and I didn't even actually ever try to make money from it for a long time, because I, one of my original teachers had told me that it was just not okay for somebody to charge money for their gifts. And so I believed him. And then later on, though, it was like, well, pay the rent or not pay the rent. So then I became a little more broad-minded about it.
You know, I know what you're saying. I had a little trouble with that myself, and you know, because I did some reading work early on, but it was something I couldn't do full time. And but you know, when you're doing, that is your life, and God gave you that ability for a reason.
Yeah.
Why not? You know. So.
Yeah, and that's the truth. That's the truth. And then later on, it once again, I seem to go in these like 10-year periods of figuring things out. But the notion of doing intuitive work full time is just, that's a really difficult path to choose. Because there are jokes about psychics looking like 10 miles of bad road, and that's the truth, because it's so incredibly energetically draining. So I think that most people who are awake and empathic and intuitive and psychic, that for their own, you know, safety and protection and survival, they don't do it full-time. They even maybe do it less than part-time.
You know, that's funny, because I do paranormal research and go out in the field, and we found that we had a tolerance level for being around, you know, paranormal phenomena. And we kind of scaled it to twice a month doing our cases. And I just ran into someone who, he teaches martial arts, and he looked at me and says, well, I know what the problem is with you. And he says, with you only doing that twice a month. And I looked at him and I says, what? And he says, you need to work on you need to do different movements. It's a form of martial art that will help develop your chi and raise your energy so you can do more of that. He says most people will not be able to go beyond that if they don't, you know, stop and address that. And most people don't realize that, you know, they need to do this.
Yeah.
And I was blown away. I didn't realize there was actually something I could do about it.
Oh, sure, for sure there is. But for me, I think, since most of my abilities tend to be in the emotional empathic range, it just was a personal decision that there's only so much of that I want to do. I mean, it's too much to be dealing with the horrors of people's lives on a daily basis. I mean, as a therapist, I have a little bit of detachment about it, where I get it. I understand fully that if I'm all enmeshed with them, I'm no help at all, and it's really, you know, their task to uncover themselves. It's not my job. Whereas in psychic work, we tend to sort of lose sight of that sort of compassionate distance a little bit. And we sort of jump in and start telling people, you know, what we get. And it's just a challenge. And I think everybody deals with it in their own way.
Yeah, I it's like I was just out on a case last night, and it, you know, five stories of solid haunted building, and we just came out with our butts kicked.
Wow.
And, basically it's going to be 2 weeks till we go back in because we need to recharge. And I knew it.
Yeah.
It's just, you get in there and, you know, it's just like you're talking about, there's all this emotion and raw
there is.
Pain
it's
and
overwhelming.
Anger and, yeah, and you just...
Yeah,
you
that's
just,
my experience of ghosts, is that it's overwhelming emotion. And so I actually don't do a whole lot of that much anymore. I mean, not on purpose. Not as much as I did when I was younger. It's just, I remember the strongest experience I've had in years was I went over to London, because that's my ancestry, Scott and English. And so I was going through all the castles, and I think it was in the Tower of London. And I was just, I had the most outrageous, horrible, horrible, horrible reaction, and I couldn't shake it off for like 2 days after that. So it's just overwhelming, you know. No matter how hard I work at keeping myself nicely grounded and all that good stuff, it's still overwhelming. You know, all that pain, all that years, centuries of pain, you know?
Yeah, I hear you. I'm half Portuguese and half Scottish, and a Scottish Islander, and I know what you're talking about. Sometimes it just crashes through, and you're like,
it
wow.
Does. And it takes you out, and you don't it doesn't come across as something not you. You know what I mean? So it feels like you're just having some kind of psychotic break or something. It's just very unpleasant. I mean, I like the pleasant visitations. Those are nice. The happy little ones, you know, where they flick the lights on and off, and you know, those little happy things are okay. You know, it's the really painful ones that I try to avoid if I can.
So this kind of stimulated you then into, you know, chasing into some new areas then with the writing and the things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think, you know, I enjoy all the things that I do. And I honestly think that some of the things I've chosen over the last 20 years or so are really kind of for my own protection. You know, to take sort of a step away and still be doing things that I love to do.
Then you're still going to be psychic no matter what anyway, so it's just you're choosing that you get some choice in the matter.
You do,
you know?
And I've also learned for myself that simply because I get something, it doesn't mean that I necessarily have any right to share it. You know what I mean?
You know, that's a good point. I'll go into places and I know instantly that somebody is not telling the truth or something is not what it appears to be, and you wrestle with that. I know what you're talking about. Sometimes you just get tired of being put in that position. You know, it's like, why did I have this damn gift? Why couldn't it just be somebody else? But then, you know, on the other hand, I really enjoy it, you know.
Oh, for sure. Me too.
It's a blessing.
Me too. Yeah. But then I try to remember that, I can't really know what any other person is up to on the deepest levels, you know, putting it in soul terms. I can't ever really know what their soul's up to. I can't know that. And so, you know, it makes it easier for me to not feel compelled to just sort of like blurt out everything that I pick up, you know, because I can't know what they're up to. And so I can trust them. I can trust them that they're just going to do what they need to do. You know, which makes it easier for me.
My experience with this stuff, like the case yesterday, we do pre-investigation work before we'll go in on a major case. We'll go visit, standard procedure. But you know, I'm finding that when it comes to spirits, it's sometimes even on the EVPs, it's not so much what they say, it's what they do.
Yeah, I think regular old alive humans, that's true too.
Yeah, it's just interesting to, you know, to see some of the things carry over. But you know, there's the one thing I will find with ghosts is they seem to be much more willing to tell the truth about things. They're not so much overt liars as they are just you know, misleading, or they're just you know, they don't make sense to us.
Yeah.
But
you
know, it takes a while to ascertain as to what you're really seeing. Sometimes we make snap judgments, you know, you've got ability, but are we really seeing it, you know, correctly? And I'm finding if I take my time, you know, and not just come to immediate judgment,
right,
it seems to work better. So, you know.
Right. And I'm pretty convinced now that we, no two of us see anything the same way anyway. It's like, I really do believe that we all are having our own individual, you know, separate, discrete, subjective realities. And so it just makes things more fascinating. So I just don't ever really assume that I have, like, any kind of authoritative take on something. I try to keep it, pretty clear for myself that I'm just getting a subjective take on whatever this is, that whatever my awareness is, it's like that thing about if you're in the room with the elephant and the lights are off, if you're at the tail end, everything's going to feel like the tail. You know, if you're at the front, you know, it's all going to feel like, oh, this creature is this long thing here with a opening at the end, you know. And so it depends on what wisdom we bring into the room with us, you know, what awareness, what expectations also.
Yeah, because we you know, if we could actually see everything that was going on, I think we'd go mad.
I don't think we're capable of that. I think you know, Deepak Chopra said something once about the world, about the everything being more than we can imagine, and I think that's true.
Yeah, that's the statement was something a lot along the lines of, not only is the universe stranger than we imagine, it's stranger than we can imagine.
That's it. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I agree. I totally agree with that.
I know. It's just you know, I've worked in aerospace and been around, you know, spacecraft development, that kind of thing, my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some amazing stuff, and I still get surprised by some of the stuff just in my own little profession of what we do.
Yeah. Well, it keeps life exciting.
Yeah, well, you know, I've worked around some of the smartest people on the planet, and some of them are also kind of, you know, they're kind of crazy.
Yeah.
They got a screw loose. You got to have something wrong with you to handle high energy materials. So, you know, I kind of like actually hunting ghosts more. I'm 50 years old, and I'm getting to the point now where I just can see my retirement coming, and I can do paranormal stuff and write books like what you're doing.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful.
Oh, it would be so liberating just to go around writing about haunts and doing the radio show on the road. Oh,
well,
yeah.
There you go. See, wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, it will, yeah. I'll tell you what, there's a parallel. I'm writing fiction, too.
Are you? What are you writing?
I'm writing a book about, basically, I was born in El Paso, Texas, and on in Fort Bliss, Army base there.
Okay.
And my father worked out at White Sands in the Proving Grounds. And,
oh, goodness.
So I grew up around all these people that did this work. So, I've been around it my whole life. So I'm writing about basically what happens when the United States makes this discovery. It's a sci-fi trilogy. And the first book is very, very close to finished. I've been just really fine-tuning the whole thing. And I'm actually going to publish that on Amazon, basically self-publish, because I don't feel like going through all the trouble of trying to deal with the Seven Sisters and go through that. So I'm going to self-publish and see how it goes. But it is, it's a book about traveling between universes and what happens when the U.S. discovers that it can actually protect itself from attack by doing a very unique technology with traveling between universes. And some of the consequences of that become very apparent. And also, by the way, the goddess Isis makes an appearance in the book.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
She turns out to be an employee willingly. She's been around a long time, but she comes back because she's sent back, and she forms an alliance with the U.S. government and becomes an employee of the government, a goddess.
Wow.
Get it? Funny.
That's pretty bizarre. I like that. I like it. That's
wonderful. So anyway, yeah, so let's talk about your book. I mean, you've got a psychologist, your own particular bent, same kind of theme. You took your work and transformed it.
I did.
And then the vampire thing. I'm just curious. Yeah, I mean, what's, you know, where did that come in, and how does this story work, and what's delicious about it?
Well, I was just always a vampire fan. Always. In fact, one of the first books I ever remember reading as a kid was Bram Stoker's Dracula, much to my mother's horror, because she thought I was already possessed, and now she knew it for sure. You know, so something about that archetype has just always appealed to me in all of its various, you know, permutations, because there's the monster type of Dracula, and then there's kind of the more erotic form that has come out in the last 20, 30 years. And so they're all fascinating. And so my book has a little bit of all of that in it. There's some really scary type vampires, but mostly, my vampires see themselves as a little bit superior, actually. because they're not encumbered with a lot of the rules and regulations and moral things that they would see that limit human beings.
Huh. And is this like a multi-part series, or is this something you're going to be writing more of? Or?
Well, I had intended for it to just go on indefinitely, and two of the books are already out and published, two in the series, and then my publisher and I just kind of came to a parting of the ways, so now I'll have to find another publisher for the third book, and it's not finished yet anyway, but I had intended it to go on for a long time. So
yeah,
we'll
but
see.
You're still writing, though.
Yeah, I'm still writing. I'm still writing, and I sent in a short story for an anthology. So I'm just trying to keep myself motivated. Writing is a tough business, you know, right? Publishing is a tough business. Yeah.
It's extremely just getting the book done. Has been a labor of love. I mean, I've never done anything like this, and I've done technical writing, and you know, I'm the guy they call for troubleshooting. I can do all kinds of things in my work, but wrestling with characters who are sometimes I want to scream at them.
That's the fun part, though. Like you said, it's like the writing the book part is the fun part. It's dealing with all of the stuff after that that becomes a challenge. And you really do. I mean, people warned me that you have to have a really tough skin to get into the publishing world. And I heard them and I believed them, but I didn't really understand what that meant until now, until I went through a whole bunch of different weird, unpleasant things. So now I know. Live and learn.
Yeah, I'm just looking to have somebody who's pretty decent at protecting me from that deal with the... you know, getting the book to the point where it's ready and, you know, cut them in for a piece and then basically run it through the Kindle program and avoid that. I just don't want to deal. I've read too many horror stories about...
Well, and there are, but one challenging thing for when we self-publish is that all of the promo and distribution of... Well, not distribution if you're going to do the Kindle thing, but all the promo is really in your lap. And it's an ongoing, tremendous, huge commitment, you know. So that's one challenge about that, you know. So, but lots of people choose that.
Yeah, I just, you know, I've only got so much energy and time, you know. And I'm 50, and I'm looking at the clock is ticking on my life, and I'm not exactly looking to make a lot of money off of it. I just love the writing.
Okay,
and
well then that sounds perfect.
Yeah, so I saw this technical solution come along, and I thought, well, if Kindle turns out to be this, you know, great way to do it, and I get 30% per unit sold, wow, that's nice. And not only that,
it gets
noticed.
Right. You have to figure out ways, though, to get it noticed. You know?
Yeah.
And so that's the challenging part. That's the challenging part. And theoretically, I mean, that is supposed to be what is one of the good things about, you know, getting with a publisher is that then they have all these distribution channels and marketing things and they help with that. So that is a good thing about a traditional publisher. But no matter how, excuse me, no matter how you get your book out these days, whether it's through a publisher or doing it yourself, you still have to do most of the promo. So you know, it won't be that different for you. But I think that's marvelous. I'm glad you're doing that.
Yeah, I just am I'm taking it one step at a time. I mean, the first step is finish the darn thing. It's been in my life for 3 years now, and, you know, I've been between family illnesses and things going on, I've just been pecking away at it, but it's getting there, and I'm just so pleased, you know, because it's going to be it's going to come out nice. But I've got one other book I'm writing about stroke, which is going to be a nonfiction.
Okay.
About my father's stroke, and it's going to be called Together, Together, We Together, because when we had my dad had a major stroke in 07, and that's all he could say when we were in the hospital. He was saying Together, Together, We Together.
Wow.
So that is going to be the title of the book, and it's
lovely.
Our journey through stroke, because when a stroke happens to people, it's not just to the person that had the stroke, it's the whole, everybody around them has the stroke,
it is,
too.
It is. Well, how is he now?
He's pretty comfortable. We've got the seizures under control, and he has a, he has a pretty good vocabulary, and he lives to. When I come home from work, I check up on him, and he, my mother takes care of him full time, and I check up on him, and he's waiting to argue with me about my ghost hunting, and he tells me that I won't say the word on the air, but I'll say he tells me it's all BS. And,
well. That's okay. We like those spirited discussions, huh? No pun intended.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, I get even with him because I'll go up there and spend the night and watch we watch ghost shows just to drive him crazy.
Well, you could tell him that your inspiration for your life's work just definitely came from him. He'll love that.
I told him, I got him the other day. He told me it was all from mom's side, from the Scottish side. I says, oh, no, Dad. You know, even though it's Portuguese, you know, the Portuguese that we are, we're from the island of Peak and St. George in the Azores.
Oh.
And that part of the family, we're actually all Vikings that landed and stayed there. So I said, it could be you. And then he went crazy.
Oh,
oh my God. He's, oh, wait, that's, I'm like, oh, yeah, Yahweh.
Yeah. That's funny.
Well, the Vampire Shrink, so is that out on Amazon? Is that something I could actually pick up?
Sure. It came out in October of 2007.
Okay.
And then the second book in the series came out a year later in 2008. And
all
actually,
right.
Because at the time when I sold the book, I had an agent, and the agent managed to keep the ebook rights for me. And then, of course, my agent and I parted ways also, so he didn't do anything with them. So I'm actually having both of my books turned into Kindle versions. I'm hiring somebody to do that for me. Because it's got its own little weird thing, and I just don't have time to do that. So there's going to be Kindle versions, but there is, I think there's an e-version out of The Vampire Shrink, but there's for sure the print copies are available.
Okay. Well, I'll definitely take a look at that, because I love all things vampire-ish.
Do you?
Now that I'm on. Oh, yeah. I've been playing, oddly enough, I really had not, it's funny, I was playing around with on MySpace and Facebook, and a friend of mine at work turns out he's a really big vampire in Vampire Wars.
Oh.
And I just liked watching movies and, you know, occasionally reading books, but he got me hooked, and now I'm a level 62 vampire. And
oh, goodness.
My name is Ryder.
Oh. That's nice.
Yeah, and I'm not one of the monster vampires. I'm a refined vampire. Thank you.
You're a refined one. Okay. Yeah, I like
those
better. Yeah, the monster ones are scary, and that's all good. I'm not prejudiced against any vampires, but I like the more elegant ones, the clever ones, the ones who are sort of extraordinary. I like those better.
Now, what exactly is the storyline in The Vampire Shrink? How does this start, and can you give a kind of synopsis?
Well, sure. And actually, it came from a couple of things in my real life. One, I actually got a phone call from a mom, because I do a lot of different sort of paranormal, metaphysical work in my private practice as a psychotherapist. So I got a call from a mom saying that her daughter is all caught up in this goth and vampire, you know, underworld culture, and wanted to become a vampire, and did I have any referrals that I could give her in her area? And then a couple days later, and I have a lot of these folks in my practice, or in the private part of it, as someone who was talking to me about being an alien abductee. And so, but this person who was the alien abductee person she was speaking in a way that just really could lend itself to vampires really well. And so I went home that night and I was thinking, wow, wouldn't it just be fascinating if I opened my waiting room door and there was this gorgeous vampire out there in black leather, you know? And so I just sat down and I just started typing it, you know, about here's the psychologist, you know, kind of a thinly veiled version of me. Of course, she's having a lot more fun and with all these, you know, interesting characters, because not only are there vampires in the book, but she can see ghosts and she has her own, you know, empathic and intuitive abilities. So there's a lot of different paranormal elements. But she's in her, you know, this young woman comes to her office and who wants to be a vampire. So I just kind of took that idea from the phone call I got. And then the psychologist finds herself, she thinks that she stumbled into a new psychology specialty, you know, these vampire wannabes. And then turns out that she gets pulled into a real vampire underworld here in Denver. So it's all about her. And the first book is just about her. She's a scientist. And so she doesn't give in to the notion that there's really vampires. She doesn't give in for a long time. Because I think of it myself in my office, when somebody tells me some fantastical story, probably the first thing I think is not necessarily that, oh, you know, this weird stuff is happening and there really are, you know, werewolves and stuff. Probably I'm going to be thinking, I wonder what's going on in her life that she's feeling so afraid and out of control. I wonder who the real monster in her life is. So my heroine in the book is like that too. She really resists just kind of jumping to the conclusion that these vampires are real, because there's lots of ways to explain those behaviors psychologically. So it's just kind of her experiences as she becomes more and more, you know, she accepts the fact that there's way more going on in Denver than she ever knew.
I've got family in Denver. Now I'm worried.
Well, you know, according to the new mythology, there's vampires everywhere. And I do have lots of folks who are really into that, lots of clients, young clients especially, who are very much into the idea of that, you know, just the same as a whole lot of young clients who are very much into sort of, you know, practicing black magic. It's sort of seeking power in some way because they feel pretty powerless, you know?
It strikes me, it has elements of almost like gang-like you know, behavior,
yeah.
Especially with the younger ones, they're seeking almost like a family.
They are seeking identity. You bet.
Yeah, and it's just that, you know, because they've got, you know, moms that don't come home and dads, there's divorce situations, all that.
Right.
I kind of see that pattern with them, but you know, and some of them have even taken to drinking actual blood and doing some really bizarre practices.
Yeah, it's really pretty common actually. We humans,
really?
we have a fascination with blood, and we're terrified of it, the same as we have a fascination with death, and we're terrified of it. You know, we just have this existential horror about death and blood, but we're so fascinated by it. I think that's another thing that's fueling the interest in vampires.
Do you actually believe there is some such thing
as vampires? I don't know. I've never actually met one. I've never seen one. A lot of the things that people, you know, believe exist in the world, I hate to sound cynical, but it's like I have seen tons and tons of people who believe they are that. And, you know, once again, I can always kind of find another causal, you know, set to explain why. So I guess the answer is no, but I have an open mind, and I'm always willing to open my waiting room door and find one sitting there.
In leather.
In leather, with long, gorgeous hair. Yeah.
And then you go, finally, come in. I want to talk to you.
yeah, come on in here.
Yeah, just a moment. Are you an elegant vampire?
Yeah, well, it would kind of be apparent, really, you know? And of course, in the fantasy, then the vampire would have to have control of himself. You know, he couldn't just jump on me, suck my blood, and leave me for dead, you know? So it depends on what fantasy you have.
Well, it does have, you know, there is, I mean, in the animal kingdom, there are these creatures. So, you know, I'm not,
Yeah.
I wouldn't throw it entirely out. And not only that, I mean, some people believe that there's, you know, here I am writing about, you know, multidimensional travel and the things I was writing in my books, that it is possible for these things to pop in and out of our world. And who knows, you know, maybe
it
is something.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I am open minded, and I'm reminded of something in a different vein. No pun again intended. When I was in Sedona, maybe like 18, 20 years ago, and they were talking about having a lot of sightings of UFOs in Sedona, right? And so, I thought, well, but every time I go there, I never see anything. And then somebody explained to me that it's kind of that multiple dimensional thing. That it just you know, like you were talking about having multiple dimensions and all that stuff. But so maybe kind of flowing in and out of dimensions rather than actual literal time and space as we're used to thinking of it. You know, so then after I went to Sedona after that with the expectation that I would just be open to seeing things that maybe my normal senses didn't want to see, I saw all kinds of stuff. And not just that, I mean, I saw ghosts all over the mountains. I saw Native Americans walking around who weren't there. It was wonderful.
That's what, you know, I didn't so much see them when I was there. I've been there twice, and last time was 2005. But I could feel this enormous power all through the area, and it just was addictive. You felt more alive, and everything looked sharper and clearer, and it was just, you could feel things looking at you. And, you know, at that point, I hadn't developed some of my sight like I have now so much, and so it was just, wow.
Yeah, very exciting, huh?
It was. I mean, you know, and I took some of those pink Jeep tours and went up and looked around it, and it was just, oh, my God, this place is kick butt. I mean, it's just full of energy everywhere.
I know it is. And it's like they talk about the four, you know, vortices having very different energy, and that was my experience, that they were each one had its own sort of texture and its own, like, emotional tone. Very fascinating.
Yeah, I wonder what that was. My computer just made a weird noise. Got to put my glasses on. I'm sitting back in my recliner, chatting with, like I'm chatting with friends, which I am. But matter of fact, we have some different guests popping. Oh, the chat room's just going crazy now. Everybody's having a good time with this.
Oh, good.
They're talking about leather thongs. Oh my God.
Oh, okay.
What are you guys doing in there? But, you know, Sedona, I just have always felt, you know, when I went through Arizona, I just love that state. And eventually when I retire, I want to move to Flagstaff, Sedona area.
Oh,
I love
that's
that
pretty
so
there.
Much.
Yeah, it's very
pretty.
Yeah,
but, you know, you talk about the UFO thing. I mean, I grew up around a lot of, you know, again, the whole space, you know, propulsion, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a scientist. I mean, that's, you know, I do computer science, and I've done, you know, information systems. I've been around the Project Paperclip scientists, the German, you know, Nazis that came here and started all the aerospace here. I've actually had dinner with some of these people. And I fully believe that back, you know, going as far back as we can remember in history, that this stuff has been going on. And that at some point in the 40s, 50s, and right up to the present day, that there is activity going on throughout pretty much the whole country, but a lot more in the Southwest than people would imagine. And I really believe firmly in that because I've just seen too much evidence. And I've studied this I've studied for 30 years, and I really do believe there are these craft that are showing up. And, you know, in a 13-billion-year-old universe, you've got to know somebody. You know, with the amount of life that's possible, even in this galaxy, it's somebody has had to have cracked space travel.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
I really like the vision. I like the vision that they created in that movie Contact with Jodie Foster. Did you see that?
Yeah.
I like that. I liked it. That, you know, traveling through all those little wormhole things. And then when she got there, it's like they created a reality just for her. That was just so perfect. I enjoyed that.
I thought it was just a neat way of getting people to realize they have to take responsible for not wait.
Oh, you bet. Absolutely.
Somebody.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was exactly it. But it was just so, what I loved was the science in it. A lot of that was all real, based
it
on
is.
Real theory.
It is. I was just watching
yeah.
a special the other day about string theory again, and talking about all the, I forget how many dimensions that they have claimed to validate, that there are, what was it, 9 or 11 dimensions that they believe that the universe, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
11, yeah.
I love that stuff. I love that.
Well, you know, what's funny is, I mean, there's certain numbers, you know, if you study fractals and things like that, you know, certain numbers have tremendous significance, and you know, 11 and 9s keep showing up. And
yeah,
you
know,
I know.
Those are my two favorite numbers.
Yeah, they're just you know, and they're part of the Fibonacci sequence. And so you know, you when you go out into nature, you're seeing flowers that have you know one, you know, 3s and 5s, and
right.
the odd number petals are really you know predominant.
Yeah.
And it just feels so good. And you know, I used to hate mathematics because I hated the pencil and paper abstraction. But when I saw mathematics as pictures,
yeah.
I could grasp it. I could intuitively understand what I was looking at and go, wow, that makes sense.
It does.
You know,
it does.
Oh, and there's a beauty in it. I mean, when
yeah.
you start seeing the beauty of mathematics in the real world, people just don't realize that. I mean, but. The 11 dimensions and the ability for you know some creatures you know on another world to maybe you know have broken past you know our primitive idea of propulsion. I mean, as
right.
much as I love what we do, there's going to end up being something like warp drive or transdimensional warp or whatever they come up with will be able
yeah.
to get us.
I know, probably not that far away either.
Do you think that I've got a quick question for you? It's this is just way out there, but there's been a lot of rumor that our guys were messed with on the way to the moon by, you know, alien craft.
Huh.
And I just always wondered if the moon itself actually had any, if I were to go up there right now, would I get EVPs? And I've just wondered that. I wonder what you think. I mean, I'm just throwing this question out to random people. And
yeah,
I
don't know.
Here,
that's
so.
A new thing. I've never thought about that before. That's a new
yeah.
thing.
Is it purely an earthly phenomena, or is spirit going to be everywhere enough that it wouldn't matter where you're at? You could be at Saturn
yeah,
and get EVP.
That would be my thought, because it's like space and time are just kind of ideas that we really don't understand fully. So I don't think spirit is limited by place.
Yeah, I that's kind of where the conclusion I've come to, and I've been wondering if I could find somebody who knows somebody who could get could do an experiment on the International Space Station. This has been a little idea I've been cooking up, and I'm going to see if I could figure out how to get a hold of somebody to do this, and I've got
wow.
the means to do it, and that would be a history-making thing as to,
it
you know,
would.
Say, yeah, just try an EVP session on the ISS. I mean,
yeah.
you know, what harm could it do? And then downlink the stuff and then send it to us and we see we pick up.
I'll bet there's a lot of paranormal and unexpected, you know, experimentation that the government is still doing that we don't know about anyway.
Well, it's funny. My father worked research and development in propulsion operations and did all kinds of things. You know, I grew up around all the Apollo. Through the shuttle and all that kind of thing, and it's an everyday thing for me even to this day. And I mentioned some of this, and he said, oh, yeah, that program with the CIA, and I said, yeah, and this is before he had his stroke. He said, yeah, there's something to that. And I looked
wow.
and went, what? And he said, can't tell you anymore, there's just something to that. And I went, oh, interesting. So, and you know what? I'll tell you one thing I do know about them, that if they develop a technology and they get good results with the remote viewing like the CIA programs have done,
mm-hmm.
They're not about to give up a capability that good.
Oh, no.
No, not even.
Not even, no.
Yeah. I
no.
mean, it's just, what are you going to do? I mean, you, they're spying. That's what they do.
That's
you
right.
know? So I just, the idea that the program was shut down, I'm sorry, I don't think so.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, they just don't want to worry our little heads with it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're spying on vampires with credentials and great cars.
Yeah, that would be fun. Yeah,
well,
probably a few werewolves too. Who knows?
Do you have any werewolves in your books, or?
You know, I don't, and I didn't write any kind of shapeshifters or were animals because I just don't really know a whole lot about them. And so since I've been reading about vampires forever, and vampires are basically humans who are then kind of transformed, that's easy to write about. But I just don't have a sense. I don't have a sense about werewolves. I don't have anything that I know personally about it.
Yeah, I always get the Indian feel with that, with the shapeshifters and transforming into these animals. It's definitely a native culture. And it's not even so much American Indian. I think that it was even common in some parts of Europe.
Oh, sure.
It's Romania.
Very old.
So,
yeah.
So it's a universal thing. I'm not entirely sure that stuff doesn't happen. I just don't know because, you know, matter and energy are the same thing. It's just different. So who knows what people can do.
A particle and a wave, yes.
Yeah, wave-particle duality. You and I are on the same wavelength.
Yes.
Where's the particle? I need some particles in my coffee, please.
Yeah, I don't know anything about werewolves, but I like them. There are several authors who write about werewolves that I like a lot.
Oh, who's that?
Huh?
Who are they?
Carrie Vaughn, she lives here in the Colorado, in the same town that I live in. And then there's Kelly Armstrong, she's good. And Patricia Briggs, she writes a good werewolf series. There's a bunch.
Okay.
All kinds
but
of
you're,
stuff.
But you're sticking with the monster and more elegant vampires.
Yeah,
for your series.
I always have to write about what I know. I mean, I'm I haven't exhausted that yet. So I'll write about vampires and psychics and witches and ghosts and all those things and all the various abilities. And so I'll just keep writing about the things I know. And then after I run out of all that, then I guess I'll have to break down and do some research. I also like to write about higher consciousness things, kind of like, you know, multiple dimensional things. And 'cause we don't really know. We don't know, you know, what consciousness is. We don't know. So that fascinates me as well.
That's funny. I've touched on that, you know, now and then. It's the old classic axiom with that is, what is the speed of thought? And, you know, no one has been able to really come to that conclusion as to what is thought.
No.
Where does it come from? And I had a rather astounding lesson though the other day. Earlier in the show, I brought up this Chinese friend of mine who is a martial artist, telling me about the chi, and he said, "You really think that everything you Westerners think about is always in your frontal lobes?" And he says, "Do you ever respect the other parts of the body?" And I go, "Well, what do you mean, Victor?" And he says, "It's." The reptile brain, do you give it any respect? Do you think it's just some primitive little thing, don't you? And I went, well, not really. I says, I've read enough about it. I have a respect for it, probably more than you would think, but, you know, go on. And then he went on to explain it's much more capable and much more intelligent than we give it credit for.
Well, was he talking about body wisdom or like the idea that consciousness resides in every cell of the body?
That's basically where he was leading it, that it's much more, it's not brain-centric, although we like to think that.
Right.
It's much more spread out over the whole body. And
it is.
He was just,
right. So when you look at the whole body, you could say this is mind, the whole body. It constitutes mind and consciousness. So that's pretty fascinating, yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing with transplants, where people take on the characteristics of, you know, person who did died and donated.
Isn't that fascinating? That
I know. It's like and you think about it, some of that life force that person had is now inside another person, and it can't help but infuse.
I know.
And you wonder, you know, wow, how do you explain that? I mean, is the person who came out of the transplant now a different person, so to speak?
Well, I think
I don't know.
If everything's energy, then it makes sense that the energy of the organ, you know, would then be influential in the new energy system that it's being put into, and sort of changing that individual, you know, because energy is very powerful. So it's all fascinating. That's astounding to me. Everything about the mind and consciousness, that's extremely exciting. It's like cutting edge. It's the new frontier.
Well, I came from a family where my dad's side, my grandfather was a pretty well-known neurosurgeon and ran DeWitt Mental Hospital up over by Auburn before they closed it down. He was the one of the lead doctors there, and we saw a lot of the dark side of what, you know, mental health, you know, was like in the 60s, 50s.
Yeah, oh goodness.
Oh my God, and I'm just hoping it's come a lot farther. I mean, you sound like it's really, the way you're talking, it's really come a long way.
It has, in some ways, and some of the same old problems, you know, still exist. But yeah, there's so many different, you know, areas of study of the mind and the brain and consciousness, and it's just all fascinating. That's what I meant about me having a short attention span. I won't live long enough to study everything I want to know.
I know the feeling. I have an extensive library of just about every subject there is, and it's just my place is eternally messy because I'm just reading up on everything. And
me too.
I just follow, and I can't. It's like one thing leads to another, and then you just run this journey, and you go, "How did I get here?"
Yeah, and that's kind of neat though when you follow the thread like that. It's like it takes you in amazing directions.
Yeah, I mean, just here in this conversation, you said that whole thing about the consciousness and all that. And it just stimulated the thought as to, based on your experience, do you believe, you know, considering now that we just talked about the body and how, the, you know, let's say a transplanted organ put into somebody can have this kind of effect, what is your feeling about astral travel and the ability of the soul to actually leave the body and retain a connection and do things and then come back?
Well, I probably see what we are as more, a part of us is always energy. And so it's just the sort of, I don't even know if it's a physical thing like leaving the body. It's almost as if it's just sort of a different way of looking at it, a different expectation. It's like shifting from the part of our awareness that is in the body and then shifting to the part of our awareness that is always non-physical. And so I think that we do that all the time, and we don't remember that we do it. We don't know. It's like we flip in and out all day, I think. It's like those biorhythms, but I think it's more than that. I think that we flip from our attention from the physical to the non-physical all the time.
I could get behind that. It's funny because I use subconscious thought when I know my frontal lobes are not getting it, and basically they're too stupid to figure it out.
Right.
I just throw it to the subconscious and say, go figure it out. I don't know what's going on in there, but invariably the answer will come to me if I just give it a little time and don't worry about it and go focus on something else.
That's right. If you distract yourself, then you sort of get out of the way. You get your sort of your ego out of the way, and then the bigger part of yourself, the larger part of the what do you call it, the iceberg, can still do all the things that it does, and it does that all the time. It's just that the ego gets in the way, and it's doing its job. It's trying to mediate, you know, with the world. But if we can distract it long enough, then we have access to just vast amounts of knowledge and wisdom.
Do you think that dream is, when people dream, that's part of the whole process of bringing that forward?
I do. I think it's just another state of awareness. It's like, what is that old thing about, I didn't know if I was a man dreaming I was a butterfly or a butterfly dreaming I was a man. I think it's not a discrete category. It's just like shifting attention. And it's like when we go to sleep and we shut down this, you know, one part of our brain, and then we go into REM sleep and then deeper levels, it's like it's a shifting of attention. So, yeah. And I think for some people, people go in and out of that all day in more obvious ways and some less obvious. Like, we can't really function in the world if we're always slipping into altered, you know, altered realities. But some people who are considered mentally ill, that's one of the things that's happening for them, is they're just flipping in and out of sort of an altered state, almost like a dream state. And you can't really function in the world that way, you know?
Well, it's funny. I think that even healthy people do that, though. You know,
oh, sure.
One little very annoying example of that is I have times when I will drive, and I'm perfectly capable. You know, I have a little 05 fastback Mustang. I love driving along, and I'm happy, and I've got the stereo on. And the next thing you know, I'm at my destination. I go, how did I get here? You know, it just seemed like everything was a blink of an eye and gone, and you just sort of lose yourself, you know, and that's a strange thing, you know. You think,
well, but it's also a normal thing. That's how I explain hypnosis to people when they say, you know, what's hypnosis? I can't be hypnotized. It's like, and I'll say, well, have you ever been driving? And then, you know, you'd sort of come back to yourself, and you're several miles down the road, and you don't remember doing it, but of course you did. So another part of you was driving. That's hypnosis. It's the same brainwave. It's the same thing, and that's very normal. We just do that. We go in and out of that all day. So it's like I think the expansion that'll happen with humanity is in the realm of consciousness. And a lot of those discrete categories that we think we have figured out, like dreams, hypnosis, consciousness, you know, waking, sleeping, that's all going to blur. And we're going to realize that it's a continuum, you know?
Well, it's funny because I agree totally with what you're saying. It's funny because this whole experience I just had with this friend of mine telling me about, you know, the chi energy, I took it in, I listened to it, I gave it credence, and I said, I'm going to just let the subconscious work on this. And I've decided that I'm going to take some of his lessons. Every week he agreed to teach me some of these things to help me, and I've got a few things I do that helped him, so we came up with a trade.
Yeah.
Several nights ago I woke up from a dream that was the weirdest thing. I was in the Mustang, I'm driving along in the old town of Paradise where I used to live, and I mysteriously find myself in this dojo. And I go into the dojo, and there's a master there, and he's teaching this student. But what's happening is the master is sitting there, and he's got this—he's got a cell phone in his hand, and he's talking. And the student is sitting on a chair, and dutifully doing these movements with the cell phone in one hand, and then doing the movements in the other. And they're talking, and they're looking at me like I'm strange, because I'm looking at him going, "What in the hell are you doing?"
Yeah.
And I'm going, I woke up from this dream. I'm going, okay, I'm officially losing it.
No, I think that was a cool dream.
Was that, what do you call that?
It was a cool dream. It was a good dream. It was helpful. You know, if you look at it, one way of interpreting dreams, one way, there's many, many ways, but one way is to look at every part of the dream as you.
Yeah.
You know, that you are every part of the dream. So that made total sense to me based on what you already said. That there's a part of you that's interested in learning all that. There's a part of you that's the master. There's a part of you that's kind of clueless still.
Yeah, I felt like it was trying to, I think the master was trying to get the student to listen. I think was the message. It was just like,
so
you know,
what are you supposed to be listening to?
Well, basically, I'm getting the message that this is a good thing to be doing, I'm following it. And it's funny because Kathy, who's on the one of our listeners, Kathy's Distant Echoes, and she's just a beautiful lady. She's part of that journey. There's been some developments going on a separate subject, but it all happened at the same time. The synchronicity of this stuff is nuts.
Isn't that fun? There's another good topic. Yeah.
God, synchronicity. I mean, it's just been everywhere. And everybody I know is going through this. It's like we're on an accelerated curve.
Yeah,
oh,
you noticed that. Yeah. Time is definitely moving faster.
You're sensing that too, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt. It's more noticeable than ever. Maybe because, you know, that happens with people as we get older, but I'm really noticing it.
Me too. And it's like even the younger people, though, I walk up to them and we'll talk about these subjects and they'll say, do you feel it? It's like everything's on a quickening. There's this just
yes.
crazy pulse to everything. And I said, yeah, it's even worse for us older because time for us just goes quicker and quicker.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's weird to see you kids seeing it too. Oh, yeah. So it's just, I don't understand it. I don't know if we're all basically one big connected family like this, if, you know, that's what's doing it, and God's turning the amp meter up on us. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a morphogenic field. The more that we start all thinking in a certain direction, it kind of flips us to the next level.
You're the only other person I know who knows what a morphogenetic field is, Rupert Sheldrake.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Makes total sense. Energetically,
sure
it just absolutely makes sense.
And for those in the audience, a morphogenetic field is basically saying that if something is done anywhere in the universe, for example, let's say I mix up a new type of chemical, and this is an actual example, they find that in certain experiments in universities, they'll mix up a type of a chemical and have it a new reaction take place, and new structures will start showing up there in that lab that they've never seen before. Clear on the other side of the country, a similar lab will suddenly start having the same sorts of compounds showing up in similar experiments, but not quite the same. And there's been these suppositions that it's because everything is connected, and it doesn't matter where it's at. As long as you come up with something new, the universe says, oh, great, I'll pop that up over here and over there and over there.
Yeah, it's like the web, you know, talking about it being a web of energy. That anything that happens on one part of the web will then trickle across the entire web.
So
just a fascinating thing.
So basically, God is a webmaster.
Well, there you go. There you go. Right.
I like that, man. That's really cool. God's
a
webmaster.
Web mistress, you never know.
Yeah, that's true. You know,
and it also reminds me of the notion, you know, Jung's idea of the collective unconscious, that everything is just a fabric of a large piece of something that's beyond our comprehension, and we all have access to it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think that there's no knowledge that we can't get to if we just, open
our
minds.
Well, it's all there. It's all like there's going to the deepest levels of our unconscious. Everything is there. So that's fascinating.
Well, I'll tell you what, this hour has gone by so quick.
I know, it did.
Would you entertain the possibility of coming back again so we could do this again? Cause I want
oh,
to
sure, anytime.
Okay, I'll set something up after the show, but my God, what an amazing discussion. I'm just sorry we're going to have to get off here, but... why don't we go ahead and if you have anything coming up or any different developments coming up, go ahead and take the stage and talk about your website or whatever.
Yeah, I'd just like to share my website address so that people can – I have a blog. So my website is my name, two websites, the one for my therapeutic work and my intuitive work is my name, LYNDAHILBURN.com. And then my author website is just my name with the word author after it, .com. And so you can get to all my stuff. I try to keep it updated.
Okay.
Okay.
And all right. So we will get in touch with you again to have you on again and continue this discussion where we left off. And I will definitely pick up a couple of copies of your books and read up on the vampires because I think
all right,
cool.
That'd be terrific. It was great talking to you, John. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and God bless.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye now. And with that, my friends in the chat room, let's see who we got here. Kathy, of course, here every week. Karen and Luna Woman, bless you guys for being here. This is a great show. Jake, exclamation mark, Jake, good to see you, my friend, and guest 4119, and to all the listeners who are going to download the show later, downloading. So with that, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio. We're going to be signing off, and I think I'll play the I'm going to play the Ghost Riders in the Sky. Let's do a little Ghost Riders. and we will be on tomorrow. Oh, I forgot, real quick. Tomorrow, Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, we're going to have Rebecca Jordan, the owner of the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, say that fast three times. And she will be on with us at 8 o'clock. So put that as a must listen to, because it's going to be a great interview. With that, this is Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio signing off.